focusing mainly on the places he was at. But here in the Apostle Paul's life, it's good for us to be able to picture in our minds where things take place, because that's something that is so frequently not noticed. Okay, we start out with the Apostle Paul at Jerusalem. Now, in Acts chapter 8, we read here that Paul was one who was making trouble. Verse number 1, and Saul, his name was then, Saul was consenting unto his death. Death of who?
Stephen.
All right. So he's consenting unto the death of Stephen. At that time, there was great persecution against the church, which was in Jerusalem. And they were all scattered abroad throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. And devout men carried Stephen to his burial and made great lamentation over him. As for Saul, he made havoc of the church, entering into every house and hailing men and women, committed them to prison. Therefore, they were scattered abroad and went everywhere preaching the word. Now, as you look at our map of Israel here, Saul's persecuting, his headquarters there is in Jerusalem, and as he's persecuting the Christians there from Jerusalem, he's going all over the place, finding people, putting them in prison, putting them to death, do whatever he can to destroy them. So he's causing a great deal of persecution there, and as a result, the Christians are spreading all over the place, and they're carrying the gospel with them. They went everywhere preaching the word. And these aren't preachers, you know, these were just the lay people like you and me. But we would go through that area, and as you spread out, you would share the gospel with others. So they were proclaiming the word to the people that they were ministering to or meeting along the way, and everywhere they went, they were sharing the gospel. And so that was a great blessing there. But then we see also in chapter 9, then in chapter 9, Saul was breathing out, yet breathing out threatenings and slaughters against the disciples of the Lord, and he went to the high priest and desired of him letters to Damascus to the synagogues that he may, that is, he found, if he found any on the way of this way, the believers, whether they were men or women, he might bring them bound unto Jerusalem. All right, so there's a long hike up there. His plan was, I'm going to go up to Damascus, and I'm going to find Christians, and I'm going to wipe them out. So that was his plan. So that takes us to his encounter as he's traveling up the road to Damascus, the dark red one there, getting up to Damascus. He's just outside of Damascus, and he encounters the Lord. And it was there that the Lord spoke to him. And we see him in chapter 9, verse number 3. And as he journeyed, he came near Damascus. And suddenly there shone around about him a light from heaven. And he fell upon to the earth, and he heard a voice saying unto him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? All right, now, think about the distance here we're looking at. You know, here's your scale of kilometers over here. So from Jerusalem, you know, be about 80 kilometers to there. So you're looking probably 150 kilometers or so to get up there to Damascus. It's a long hike, and he gets up there. His whole goal was to capture Christians and to persecute them, bring them back to Jerusalem, and have them put to death. That was his goal and ambition. And the people of Damascus knew that he was coming. I mean, they heard that, and that's why later, we're not going to deal with the whole story here, but if you remember when Saul comes to Christ and he goes into the city, and God tells the Ananias there to go talk to him. He says, well, we've heard about this guy, and we know he's coming. And, you know, it was kind of like he was arguing with the Lord. Like, Lord, are you sure? Sure that's what you want? So here we find that Paul's conversion then was in Damascus or on the road. I personally think he probably came to know the Lord there on the road when he saw the great light and talked with the Lord. And he humbled himself right there before him. But wherever that may be, or may have been during the 3 days that he was, you know, blind and the fasting that he was talking to the Lord, sometime in that span there, he came to Christ. And we see here in verse number 10, and there was a certain disciple at Damascus named Ananias, And to him the Lord said the Lord in a vision, Ananias, and he said, Behold, here am I, and the Lord said unto him, Arise, go into the street, which is called Straight, and inquire in the house of Judas for one called Saul of Tarsus. For behold, he prayeth, and hath seen in a vision a man named Ananias coming in and putting his hand on him, that he might receive his sight. All right? So God gave Paul a vision. And if I call him Paul, it was actually Saul, but you know what I mean. So he gave him a vision that there would be a man named Ananias coming in and put his hands on his eyes, and his eyes would regain their sight. So Saul gets this vision from God. Ananias gets this talk from God, and God says, go talk to him. And Ananias is a bit of, more than a bit nervous about this talk, obviously. But he goes in, and Saul is healed of his blindness and comes to know the Lord, and immediately begins to testify for the Lord. Now, his life is transformed. Verse number 19. And when he had received meat or food, he was strengthened. Then was Saul certain days with the disciples, which were at Damascus, and straightway he preached Christ in the synagogues, that he is the Son of God. That's amazing. Here's a man that just 3 days earlier was out to kill every Christian he could find. And God got a hold of his heart, turned him upside down, and now he's preaching Christ, that he is the Son of God. And so, totally transformed life, and as a result, a transformed ministry. Verse number 22, and Saul increased the more in strength and confounded the Jews which dwelt in Damascus, proving that this is very Christ. So this was the argument. Was Jesus really the Christ, the Messiah? Now you remember, the word Christ is the New Testament rendition of Messiah. Messiah is the Old Testament Hebrew. Christ is the New Testament Greek. So he says he was proving to the people, to particularly the Jews, he wasn't dealing with Gentiles here, he's proving to the Jews there that Jesus was the Christ. And so Paul was a scholar. He knew the scriptures. And even when he was against the Lord, it wasn't like he was ignorant. He knew what the scripture said, but he wouldn't accept that. And it was not until the Lord got a hold of his heart and transformed him that this took place. Now, right in here, as you read through Acts 9, there's obviously some gaps that God doesn't give us all the details of. Because we find in Galatians chapter 1, verse 17, that Paul spends time in Arabia talking and spending time with the Lord. All right, so as we look here at Galatians chapter 1, in verse number 17, it says, Neither went I up to Jerusalem to them which were apostles before me, but I went unto Arabia and returned again unto Damascus. So, exactly when he went to Arabia, I mean, it sounds like it was right after he got saved, the people started getting stirred up there. He probably was getting some persecution right away there in Damascus. And God said, go to Arabia. And he goes out to Arabia, out in the desert, out nowhere, out in the middle of nowhere, and he spends time with God. How long? We don't know for sure, but it sounds like it was more than a year. He spent a long time out there with the Lord. And it was there that the Lord revealed to him a lot of the New Testament information. Because he talks about how he didn't learn it from people, he learned it from God. Now, he could read the scriptures. Remember, they didn't have the New Testament. So it wasn't that he was getting the New Testament instruction from anybody. He was getting it from God. And God revealed to him these details of things. And much of that is what Paul has recorded down for us in scripture. So Paul spent that time there with the Lord out in Arabia. Then after he left Arabia, he went back to Damascus. And this is where we find his basket escape. And back there in Acts 9, we don't see the Arabia incident there. And you think, well, where did that fit in? But it had to have fit in right in here during this time when he was preaching to them. But in verse number 25, let's take a look at 23 first. And it says, and after many days were fulfilled, the Jews took counsel to kill him. But their lying in wait was known of Saul. And they watched the gates day and night to kill him. All right, so they were waiting. They didn't want to kill him in the city. They were waiting at the gates. And as soon as he walked out the gate, they were going to grab him and kill him. But then in verse number 25, and then the disciples took him by night and let him down by the wall in a basket. Now, I got a question for you to chew on. Why did they do that? Why didn't they just let him down on a rope? I mean, it would be, for a full-grown man, it would be a whole lot easier to throw a rope over the side of the wall and the man just slide down the rope. I mean, if you've ever climbed ropes, that's pretty easy to do. Especially if you put a pair of gloves on or some cloth in your hand, you're just going to slide down the rope and he'd be down at the bottom and out of there in no time. Why put him in a basket? I don't have an answer. So if you've got an answer, I'd like to hear it. I mean, if they were putting him in the basket to try to disguise the fact that it wasn't a man, where they weren't doing this in the daytime, they were doing it at night. So
maybe he just lacked up a body strength.
Possibly.
You know, you're going like 10, 20 meters down a wall and go hang onto a rope, it'd be pretty kind of, you know, danger of falling.
Maybe. I mean, they could have just tied the rope under his arms and let him down. I don't know. I don't know why the basket. I've often wondered. And think of the basket size. I mean, if we had a basket big enough to carry Peter, you know, put him down over the wall, it takes, you know.
Well, that's an extreme example.
No, it's not. It's just, but
you know, common in the Middle East to use baskets for raging, lowering things from the upper floors of buildings. You often see people in marketplaces letting down baskets with money in them to it.
Maybe they had a basket and they commonly used it.
They put meat,
you know,
or bread or something in the basket and put the change in and put
it back. We've got this basket, why don't we put you in the basket? And, you know, lots of people have been in the basket before and you can use it too.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's a good one. I thought about that many times. I wonder why the basket? I wonder why. Yeah, because you go back to when, remember the spies that were led down by Rahab? She just threw a rope over the side and they slid down the rope and took off.
Spies, they were, you know, Mission Impossible. Yeah. Maybe there was a regular basket that they used for building materials and things up and down the wall. It might have been a thing. Yeah, like a lift.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Whatever it was, it is something for you to ponder. But that's where it took place there. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, it mentions this again. Let me just flip over there. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Yes, all right, I'll read this first and then you can do your question. And through a window in the basket was I let down by the wall and escaped his hands. Okay, so again, it was through a window, in a basket, down the wall. Peter, your question.
Back in verses 7 and 8. Seeing no man, it's used in 7 and again in 8, one of Paul and one of the people with him. What does that actually mean, seeing no man? Does that just mean literally not seeing a man, or does that mean being blind?
Well, they heard God speaking to them, but they didn't see God.
Oh, sorry, didn't they?
And there seems to be, you know, some people say there's a contradiction here when you read some of the other accounts of this where Paul was telling the story. In this account, he says that those that were with him, and the men which journeyed with him stood speechless, hearing a voice but seeing no man. And the other one says that they didn't hear.
Paul then says, Paul rose from the earth, and when his eyes were opened, he saw no man. But he was also blind. I mean, he wouldn't have seen a man if he was blind anyway. Does that mean he was blind, seeing no man, or is that...
Yes, because he couldn't see...
They saw no man, it doesn't mean they were blind.
Well, probably not.
Otherwise, they wouldn't be leading him by the hand.
No.
They'd have been blind too.
No.
Just unusual if the King James uses the expression seeing no man in two verses in a row, but it apparently means something entirely different.
Yeah, well, neither one of them saw him. Paul might have tried, but his eyes were blind and he didn't see him. But yeah, you're right. It is an unusual situation there, but he heard God, but he didn't see. But at the same time, he actually tells us later that he saw Christ at that time. So that's a mystery too.
And why weren't the men with him blinded by the light like he was?
Well, probably because God wasn't after their hide, he was after Saul. And what happened to those other guys? That's another question. I mean, if they were just as vengeful as he was to kill all the Christians, what happened to them? They run and hide when Saul got changed? Or
you think so, wouldn't you? You'd be so amazed that also come to Christ, but apparently not.
You know, the Lord doesn't tell us anything about those guys. Where did they go? They just kind of disappeared.
It's a remarkable incident, but there's very little actual information conveyed in it.
Yep. So that's our events there in Damascus. And then next, we find him back down at Jerusalem again. And he's introduced by Barnabas. Now, this is the time when he comes back to Jerusalem. And the people are saying, hang on now, this is a Saul of Tarsus. This is a trap. Don't let him near you. And nobody would trust him. So in verse number 26, and Saul, when Saul was come to Jerusalem, he essayed to join himself to the disciples, but they were all afraid of him and believed not that he was a disciple. And Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles and declared unto them how he had seen the Lord in the way and that he had spoken to him and how he had preached boldly at Damascus in the name of Jesus. Barnabas, everywhere we find Barnabas was a man of encouragement. He was encouraging people all the time. And here he's doing the same. He's standing up with Paul. Nobody wanted to be near Paul. Nobody trusted him. They all thought he was lying and deceiving. This is one of his tricks to try to figure out who we are. And as soon as we let on that we're Christians, he's going to grab us. Nobody would believe him. But Barnabas did, and he introduced him to the others and assured them that he was the real deal. So that was an interesting thing. Now we find him sent off to Tarsus in verse number 29. And he spake boldly in the name of the Lord Jesus and disputed with the Grecians, but they went about to slay him. Now, who were the Grecians?
Greeks. Jews who adopted Greek language and culture.
They're the Judaeans.
So they were Jews, but they took on Greek culture. They lived like Greeks. All right. So these were the Grecians, and he was debating with them. The Grecians were also among those that persecuted other people. I think it was Stephen that the Grecians were among them. But there were a lot of persecutions there. So they were kind of the zealot type of guys.
They also liked the circumcision party, the ones who insisted on Jewish ceremonies for Christians.
You're asking a question? Are you?
Were they the same guys?
No, I don't think so. No, those were actually people that professed to be Christians in Galatians. They professed to be believers, but they were holding on to the circumcision stuff, whereas these Grecians were the ones that were saying, no, they didn't believe any of that stuff. So then we find that verse number 30, which when the brother knew that they brought him down to Caesarea and sent him forth to Tarsus. Now, it's always interesting. They brought him down to Caesarea. Yes, Caesarea is up. Why did they say they brought him down to Caesarea? John Ray.
Down the hill.
Is that what you're going to say, John Ray?
Well, yes. Also, I guess sometimes you base it on what place has capital over another place.
Right.
For example, place.
Well, that's true. That's true too. But in this case, everything seemed to be down from Jerusalem. Jerusalem was on the mountaintop, and so everywhere he went, it was down from Jerusalem. Even in Caesarea was up, but it was down from Jerusalem on the coast, so it was much lower height than the other places.
But oftentimes as well, a place that is of importance will oftentimes be on a literal high place because it is, I mean, that's what makes it a special place because it has better fortitude, it has better view.
And a lot of the fortified cities were up on hills, up on the mountains. They did that intentionally.
So I would say we're going up to Two Rocks, but also would say we're going up to Mundaring because it's up the hill.
So he's on his way now to Tarsus. And as we broaden our view again, we see Tarsus was all the way up here. So, good long hike by sea. Why did he go to Tarsus? That's where he came from. That was his home area. So Paul spent the next period of time in his home area there. Galatians chapter 1 mentions this again. And this is his home area. And verse number 21. And afterward they came into the regions of Syria and Cilicia. All right, so this is Syria. This is Cilicia. Okay, so we came into the regions of Syria and Cilicia, and was unknown by face in the churches of Judea, which were in Christ, but they had heard only that he which persecuted us in time past now preaches the faith which once he destroyed. And glorify God in me. Alright, so Paul went up there and spent his time wandering through this area up in here, preaching to his family, friends, people up in that area, witnessing to them, telling them about the Lord. But he was a long way from the persecution that was threatening him down here in Jerusalem. Okay? And as we continue on, he goes down to Antioch. Alright? And Acts chapter 11, we find Barnabas again. Acts chapter 11, verse number 25. Then departed Barnabas to Tarsus for to seek Saul. Now Barnabas had been there in Antioch. Antioch, now remember there's two Antiochs. This is Antioch of Syria. The other Antioch is way over there. We'll see that next time when we get into his first journey. But this is Antioch of Syria. This is Paul's sending church now. This is the home church for him. This is in Acts 13. This is where he first sent out as a missionary. So Antioch of Syria is a very important place. What was one of the significant things? See if you can remember this. What was one of the significant things the Bible tells us about the Christians in Antioch?
It's where they were first called Christians.
That's right. That's where they were first called Christians. Because they were Christ-like ones. They were called Christians. And so this was a kind of the northern religious capital, I suppose, of Christianity in that day. Jerusalem was a headquarters, but Antioch was another major headquarters for the believers. A lot of Christians there. And Barnabas was there, and he said, you know, I'm going to go see if I can find Saul of Tarsus, because he could really be a help to us. And so he ventured over there to Tarsus, found Saul, brought him back with him to Antioch, and they spent quite a bit of time there together in Antioch, verse 26. And then when he had found him, he brought him unto Antioch. And it came to pass that a whole year they assembled themselves with the church and taught much people. And the disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. All right, so they come back here, they spend that time there in Antioch, and were greatly blessed and benefited by that time. Okay, and then we find that he goes down again and visits Jerusalem with Barnabas. Now, there was some things that took place there in the latter part of chapter 11 of Acts, verse number 27. And in these days came prophets from Jerusalem unto Antioch, and there stood up one of them named Agabus, and signified by the Spirit that there should be a great dearth throughout all the world, which came to pass in the days of Claudius Caesar. And the disciples, every man according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea, which also they did, and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. Alright, so Paul and Barnabas have been up there. They're preaching the gospel, strengthening the believers, and they, you know, it's in a more fruitful area there, along a river there, and you can see it's greener, so it's lower land than it was in Jerusalem. A lot of the Christians down here in Jerusalem, because of persecution, because of the drought, because of the problems, they were struggling. So the people up here in Antioch said, you know, we need to send help. Those people down there, they're our spiritual ancestors. They're the ones that have led us to Christ. We came to Christ through them. We need to send help down to them to be a help and a blessing to them. So they gathered their funds together and they sent them down there by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. They chose these two preachers to carry it down for them. And so Barnabas and Saul then carried the funds down to Jerusalem to be a help and a blessing to them. And in chapter 12 and verse number 25, Barnabas and Saul returned from Jerusalem when they had fulfilled their ministry and took with them John, whose surname was Mark. Alright, so they then head back to Antioch after they fulfilled their mission, and they took back with them John Mark. And John Mark will be the one that we're going to see travels with them on their first journey as they do on their first missionary journey. We're going to see that John Mark was with them. Alright, so get this picture in your mind of this situation here, and you see the distance there, 200 kilometers. You know, we're looking at 200, 400, probably 450 kilometers to get up there to Antioch. So there's no close place. Long way up there and even further to Tarsus. So this was a big, a long expense and a long way from Jerusalem here. But the Christians had spread all this way up, fleeing persecution, and now the northern headquarters was there in Antioch.
They took a ship to Antioch.
Well, you could have, but it would in a lot of ways. But in one of the situations, I don't know if it was this particular time that they went up, it talks about them going through Syria. So it may not have been this particular time. I can't remember. There were several times that they went up and down. All right, any comments or questions?
Because he actually spent 14 years in Tarsus before Barnabas came and called him.
That's what you found there.
What's the verse about Tarsus? It says he was there for 14 years.
I don't remember that. So which one was that then?
I don't remember which
Tarsus was. Oh, in Galatians? That one? Galatians 1? Oh, I think I know what you're thinking of. Galatians 1:21. Let's see it there. He does say, well, in verse number chapter 2 and verse number 1, then 14 years after I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas and took Titus with me, doesn't necessarily...
Is that Galatians 2 you're talking
about? Galatians 2. Yeah, I'd have to do some digging in that. From what time was the 14 years? Yeah, I'm not sure. But there was definitely time that lapsed in there.
But also, when he went to Arabia, that was 3 years later when he came back from there.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he was in Arabia all that time.
It implies that. It implies that. But whether it was actually the case, I couldn't say for sure. But it does imply that he was there in Arabia for 3 years.
Great holiday, 3 years in
Arabia. Yeah. You know, I find it interesting if one considers the disciples who spent those 3 years with Jesus and then was able to go out and communicate and speak and share the word and the gospel, people could connect and understand that. But when you come to Saul at that point, to have this reputation of this persecutor such, and it disappears for that while into Arabia, comes back down in successive years, going back up to Antioch, and he's suddenly this different individual that people knew before, and he's beginning to speak a different language. You know, that must have been a shock to the system.
Yep.
You know, because he doesn't come with the same connection that the disciples had with Jesus. So many must have asked the question, you know, where did he learn what he's now communicating?
And see, I think that's where he has a lot of issues, as people would attack him and say, you're not really an apostle and you're not really a you know, accredited, and that's where he's defending himself and says, listen, I got what I know from God, and God told me all these things when I was out in Arabia. Generally?
I mean, it's true that, I mean, obviously we know now, I mean, reading the Bible, we know Paul is being legitimate, but from their perspective, I mean, you can't really blame them for being on guard. I mean, like, I mean, you would be exactly something that, you know, the enemies at the time would do, pretend to be one of them, spy. So, you know, like, you'd think that, you know, like, why wouldn't they just believe him? But I think we would probably do the same thing. You know? Like, it wasn't an easy thing for them to accept, but they eventually, you know, saw that he was legitimate.
But even as Matt was bringing out here, is the fact of his education. But one of the things, too, is Paul is a scholar. And so, when he did learn these things, it wasn't like he was... I mean, he had a great advantage over the fishermen. I mean, this guy's a scholar. He had studied under Gamaliel. He was a Pharisee. He had learned the Old Testament scriptures in a fantastic way. So he had all that information, and God just helped him to turn it around and put it in a different direction. So he had a lot of information in there that he had already gained through his religious training.
That information from the Old Testament that he was well versed in, you know, not being a prophet as such, is somewhat different from what is in the New Testament, the language and the content of it all together. So even though he came with that sort of experience and knowledge of the Old Testament, there's a significant difference between what he's bringing with him knowledge-wise as to what he's probably beginning to preach and teach now.
Well, you'll see that throughout his preaching, though, many times he was saying, he was convincing them from the scriptures that Jesus was the Christ. So he was taking that information he had in the Old Testament. Now he says, yeah, Isaiah did talk about Christ. That was the Messiah, and Jesus fits it. Look how he fits it perfectly. I didn't see it before, but now I can see it. And he was convincing people and arguing back and forth, defending this, that these Old Testament scriptures really do talk about Jesus Christ. So, yeah, that information helped. Peter?
So the Christians were first called Christians in Antioch. Before that, it was called the Way.
Yes.
They followed the Way. Paul would have known all about the Way because he would have known about it so he could persecute them.
Yep.
So the minute he became confronted by Christ, he would have known exactly not only where he's coming from in the Old Testament, but he knew exactly where he's going to in Christianity as well.
Well, he certainly would have known a lot about it, but I think that there was obviously...
You know the claims.
Yes. There was obviously a lot more in-depth stuff. He learned a lot from the Lord in Arabia. He tells us that himself.
If it was something confronted with some religion you'd never heard of before, Taoism or something, you had no idea, but he would have known all about Christianity.
Yeah.
So that would have been a fairly easy fit for him to slot straight in there.
Yeah. Very good.